Another way that people get wealthy is through compound interest, the magic of compound interest. Now, compound interest absolutely applies to marketing as well. So if I can do a process and it's something that can really help me compound my time, money, energy, and effort, that's something that I want to invest in.
Welcome to the System Hub Podcast.
Hola.
Konnichiwa.
Guten Tag.
Where we interview world-class experts.
You have to have a lot of passion for what you're doing.
I was fanatical in my 20s.
If you could find a way to produce a business that works without you, your life would change like that.
Extracting, organizing, and optimizing their best systems and processes for rapid business growth. Now, let's get into the show.
Today, I am joined by Alan Dibb, author of The One Page Marketing Plan and Lean Marketing. He's a good friend of mine. He's started, grown, and exited multiple businesses, one of which was named in the top 100 fastest growing companies in Australia. Now, his original book, The One Page Marketing Plan, really did start a movement. Huffington Post said it was one of the 10 best marketing books. It's been translated into over 30 different languages. What I love most about Alan's work, though, is his approach to marketing is very systematic. He looks for what works and really makes it repeatable. Today, very keen to dive into some of his latest thinking from his book, Lean Marketing. So perhaps, Alan, if we just jump straight into it, I'd love to get your insights on after the One Page Marketing Plan came out, and as you've seen it being picked up and applied all around the world, what sort of new insights have you made seeing it roll out?
Yeah, so the One Page Marketing Plan, as you said, it's had a lot of success, which has been nice. And a lot of what I wanted to do with that is strategy. So help people with strategy, because I saw so many people were like just throwing tactics against the wall, random acts of marketing. And let's do a little bit of SEO. Let's do a little bit of Google Ads. Let's do a little bit of podcast, whatever. And people didn't have a strategy. So the whole point of the One Page Marketing Plan was, let's put together a strategy. And when I say strategy, I want to define that. So for example, if you want to win the war, you might put together a military strategy. You might say, hey, we want to drive the enemy back to its borders. So that, it's in broad terms, what do we want to do? And so the One Page Marketing Plan, it's in broad terms, where do we want to allocate our finite resources? So where do we want to spend our time, money, and energy? And it's about putting together that on a plan that you can easily share with your team and all of those things. Now, once you've got your plan together, that's awesome. And so that we want to implement that plan. And so the second book is much more tactical. It's about how do we actually execute a plan? How do we actually do this stuff? So using that military example again, it might be, hey, we're going to cut off their supply lines. Hey, we're going to bomb their tanks. So what in specific terms are you actually going to do to implement your strategy?
The roots of the book, which talks, it's in the name Lean Marketing, and you also lend from Six Sigma and some of these process methodologies. I'd love to get your thinking around that and how you feel that plays a part in marketing.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, I was the keynote speaker at a big conference in the automotive industry. It was in Mexico, and I kept hearing the word lean. One guy introduced himself, said, I do Lean Six Sigma. Another guy was talking about lean this and that, lean manufacturing, lean thinking and all this. And I'm like, what the hell is all this lean thing that everybody's talking about? And so I looked into it and I'm like, wow, how have I been in business for all this time and I haven't really known it? And it's really a methodology for, in a systematic, structured way, knowing how to get a more consistent, a better result by doing less stuff. And it was interesting. One of the guys I was speaking to, I'd launched my book in Spanish, and he said, hey, I read your book. I really loved it. And I think of your book as lean marketing. And that's the first time I'd ever heard that term. And at the time, the penny didn't really drop. I thought, thanks very much. And we kept in touch. He became a client down the track and all of that. But that really got me thinking that a lot of what I do is figuring out how to do more with less. How do we have a bigger impact by doing less marketing? And that's really what lean marketing is all about, because whenever I look at all the best marketers in the world, yourself included, they don't do a lot of stuff. Their not to-do list is way bigger than their to-do list. So the stuff that they're doing, they double down on the stuff that's really working, the stuff that's having a large impact, And they're not bothered with the 100 other things that everyone says that they should be doing, being omnipresent on social media, TikToks, all of that sort of stuff. Not that any of that stuff is bad, but they're having an outsized impact. They're doing less stuff, but getting a much bigger result. And so that's really what I wanted to do, is help small business owners really double down on stuff that can really work for them, and them having an outsized impact by actually doing less stuff.
When we think about the marketing department, what do you see is its core function? What is it there to do for the business?
Yeah, so one of the ideas that I've got in the new book is that while there might be a marketing department, I've got 9 principles of lean marketing that are outlined in the book, but one of the core ones is that marketing should not operate in a silo. So one of the biggest mistakes is we've got the product development team, they design, come up with a product idea or whatever, the engineering team decides how to put it together, how to manufacture it, all of that sort of stuff. Then the sales team tries to sell it. And so you've got all these departments working in a silo. You've got the support team who supports it. And then it falls to the marketing team. Hey, we're not really getting our numbers. Can you guys do your magic and sell this product or get this product out to more people, generate demand? And everybody operating in a silo creates a huge amount of waste, because sales team's not talking to the product development team or the support team. Everyone's working in their own silo. So I believe for marketing to be effective, it's got to be throughout the entire customer life cycle, from product development through to engineering, through to sales. And when you look at Lean, which originates in Japan, that's exactly the way that they create that efficiency. So you would think that operating in separate teams who have specialized tasks would be the most efficient way. And that's really a mass manufacturing concept. It was pioneered by Henry Ford. But Japan, after the Second World War, their industries were completely devastated. They just couldn't afford the mass manufacturing approach, which is heaps of inventory, separate departments, specialized tasks, specialized machines. And so they created a methodology called Lean. And in Lean, you have a functional team. So if we're manufacturing a product, we've got a whole team that works together. We've got the engineer, works with the marketer, works with the sales team. We're all on board with how that product should be positioned, how it should be functioning, what it should do, how it should be supported. And I think that's the way that marketing is going to work in an effective way, if everybody is integrated, having an integrated approach to marketing. So yes, while you might have a marketing department, I think you should think of it as a marketing function that's spread across all of your departments. Because here's the thing, if your support team knew how to upsell a product, like they're talking to a customer, they've resolved a problem, and they saw an opportunity to upsell, wouldn't that increase your customer lifetime value? And if people loved speaking to your sales team rather than being afraid of speaking to your sales team, wouldn't that increase your conversions? And if your product development team didn't waste a lot of time creating stuff that nobody wanted, again, wouldn't that increase your conversions and your customer lifetime value? So I think of marketing now as a function that's spread throughout the entire organization. And that's the way that you're going to be way more efficient, way more effective, and be able to do much more with less.
Being spread across the entire organization, what is the job then of marketing as far as, is it there to advocate for the client? Is it there, or is it dependent on the different tasks that they're working on? Really, it's just coming to it from a marketing perspective, thinking about how are we going to get this in front of our target audience?
So the whole goal of marketing, and I think really the whole goal of an organization, is how do we get best fit clients to know us, like us, and trust us enough to buy from us and buy from us on an ongoing basis, and then to love us so that they'll refer, so that they'll buy in more volume, in more frequency, in more quality, in more quantity, all of those sorts of things. So we want to figure out, how do we get more and more of best fit customers to really know that we exist, buy from us, and then recommend us in every way? And I think, again, that's not just a marketing function. Often marketing thought of as an afterthought, it's often just lipstick on a pig. It's no one really wants this stuff. We have actually totally missed the mark with our positioning, our pricing, and everything like that. And now we've got to figure out who to flog this stuff to. So that's the most difficult way. It's the most wasteful way to do marketing, because now what happens is you have to do that numbers game thing. Okay, we've got to call 1,000 people to get 100 appointments to close 10 deals. And you just waste so much time, money, and resource, and it feels like pushing a boulder uphill. Whereas if you've had marketing integrated from the start, it's going to feel like pushing a boulder downhill. You give it a little push, and now it's got a life of its own. It's getting traction. More people are knowing about the product. People are loving it. People are recommending it. And so that can only happen if you've been deliberate about your positioning, your messaging, who your target market is, figuring out what problem do you actually solve. I'm shocked how many people know what their product or service is, but they don't really know who their target market is. And so starting with your target market, starting with who are our people, that's really the start of a process when you're going to launch a product or service and figure out who our best fit clients are.
I think that's one thing I really love about the original book, One Page Marketing Plan. It did follow this linear path of let's get very clear on who that target audience is. Let's get the messaging right. Let's think about how we build that audience and continue to communicate with them. And then how do we deliver that great experience to get them to come back and refer clients? When you think about lean marketing, because sometimes it's easy to see a linear path like that. Other times that linear path, especially when if marketing's across the entire organization and different organizations are going to have different challenges at any point in time. Do you have any thoughts on how to decide where to start and what are some of those key things? You already touched on get clear on the target audience, but yeah, I don't know if you have any new thinking on that.
I would absolutely start about getting clear on the target audience. I think about it this way. I can't remember. I think maybe Dean Jackson came up with this originally, or I don't know. I'm not exactly sure where I heard it, but it's such a good analogy. It's if you're the mayor of a town, and so you and I, we don't live too far away. We live in the same town. When I think about our neighborhood, there are things that the council does really well. I often see them clearing out dead trees from the forest so that there's no bushfires and things like that. Rubbish collection is pretty good. Everything's pretty clean and all of that. But then I see things where, hey, that thing just hasn't been addressed for the longest time. There's an area not too far away by the cliffs where people are jumping off, they're hurting themselves, they're leaving rubbish and all of that sort of thing because there are no amenities. So when I think about that, I think in our town, these are hot button issues. I know there's another spot where you really need traffic lights or you need something because there's accidents all of the time. Now, these things would be completely irrelevant in another town or another neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So if you were the mayor of this town, one of the first things I would recommend you do is you start addressing the hot button issues in this town, make sure that we're addressing the big problems that are out there and the stuff that we're doing well. Great. We just continue doing that. So you've got to figure out who your target market is. What are some of those problems that are real pain points for them? So a lot of times people position themselves as vitamins, which is a nice to have, nothing too urgent. I'll have it if I need it, but I want to position as a painkiller. And whether something is a vitamin or a painkiller highly depends on your target market. Depends. One market may feel like, hey, a really great SLR camera, yeah, that's a nice to have. It's a little toy or whatever. But for someone who makes their living over podcasts or Zoom or whatever, that's a painkiller. Like, I need this product to make me look good, to attract new clients, to be able to create YouTube videos. This is like literally a core tool that I use. So same product, different market. One market perceives it as a vitamin, one market perceives it as a painkiller. So you want to find that market that really perceives what you do as a painkiller, because painkillers are so much easier to sell. You can sell vitamins, but you've got to do a little bit of convincing. I've got to be like, hey, Dave, take this vitamin and it's pretty good for you. And there's no real clear evidence whether it works or not. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. And then I've got to do a lot of convincing, a lot of selling, all of that sort of thing. Whereas if you're in pain, if you've got a migraine and I say, Dave, take this and in 5 minutes, you're going to feel better, that's a much easier sell. And you're probably not going to be asking me about price and whether I can discount it and all of those sorts of things.
One idea you touch on in lean marketing, and it relates to that, once you get very clear on your target audience and how to position yourself as a painkiller, is this idea of the flagship marketing asset, which speaks right to that person. I'd love it because I feel like that's also one of these early steps that someone needs to take. It's almost like Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about that asset?
Yeah. And you've done this so well. You did it initially with Authority Content, and you've done it again with Systemology, both of your books. So they're flagship assets in your business. And I know that they've worked really well for you, as have my books as flagship assets. But basically, the idea is that a lot of our marketing is about trying to convince someone about how good their life will be if they buy our product or service. And so everybody's trying to tell people, hey, buy our stuff, and you're going to have a much better life, you're going to have a much better existence, you're going to have a much better business, all of those sorts of things. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. That's an important part of marketing, is communicating the value that you offer and what transformation people are going to have. But everybody's doing that. That's the problem. And everybody makes the same claims. Everybody claims that buy my stuff and your life is going to get better. A flagship asset is all about showing that their life is better by actually making their life better. So rather than just telling them that you're going to help them in the future should they buy from you, you actually help them in advance. You help them get a result in advance. So again, using the book analogy, so someone can buy a copy of your book, Systemology, and I don't know how much it sells for Kindle, a couple of bucks or whatever it is, and they can have a massive transformation in their business by implementing Systemology. And they may never even buy any of your courses. They'd be unwise to do so, but they may not buy your course. They may not hire a systemologist. They may not ever do any of those things, but still it created massive value for them in their lives and in their business. And it demonstrated that you can help them. Now, someone reading that, often what happens is, wow, that is such good methodology. That's something that I really want to implement in my business. I want to systemize things. And then naturally they progress and they're like, cool, I now get what Dave does. I now get what value he brings. And so I want to hire the team to do it for me or help guide me through it. Whereas if you didn't have that flagship asset out in the marketplace, what you would have to do is a lot of legwork. You'd have to do tons of cold calls. You'd have to convince someone, what is this about and who is it for and why should they buy it and all of those sorts of things, which is a massive uphill battle. Certainly possible. A lot of big businesses have been built on cold calling and cold outreach, but it's such an uphill battle. It's a numbers game. You have to push uphill. Every day you're pushing, convincing, trying to close. And it's very difficult. It's very expensive. It's very hard to do. And the problem is, once you stop, it stops, right? The whole train stops. Whereas when you have an asset out in the marketplace, like a book, and a book is just one example, there are many types of flagship assets, you've got something that creates a lot of inbound energy. So people reach out to you, be a guest on their podcast, to speak to at their event, to buy your consulting services or one of your courses and those sorts of things. So that's such a massive advantage when you've got an asset. And so the whole idea is that income comes from assets. A lot of people complain that the rich get richer. The reason that the rich get richer is because they have assets, right? So they've got either stocks or real estate or other types of business assets, and assets generate income. And the exact same thing is true from a marketing perspective. When you've got marketing assets out in the marketplace, they generate leads, they generate prospects, they generate new revenue, and it's often an inbound process. So that's the short on a flagship asset. A lot of people think of it like a lead magnet. I think of a lead magnet as much more targeted. So if you run 10 sets of ads, you may have 10 different lead magnets, and lead magnets tend to be very specific to what the ad offers. So I think of a flagship asset as like an expansive lead magnet. It's a lead magnet that you're famous for, that you're known for in your niche for. So for example, in my case, it's my book, The One Page Marketing Plan. It's, in your case, it's Systemology and Authority Content. You're known in the marketplace for those methodologies and those books, and they generate a lot of lead flow.
Yeah.
What's been your experience with having a flagship asset? How have you felt about it?
Every time I launch a business, I launch it with a flagship product, and I didn't even, or a flagship piece of marketing. I didn't really think of it that way, but reading it in your latest book got me to go, I'm intuitively doing that. And that's really how I channel everybody into Systemology. They come through that front door, and it helps them to understand the core principles and the way that we work. So I see it, I feel, and already I'm starting to see some of these steps in your work. My brain can't help to go to systems. We get clear on the target audience, and then we write a flagship marketing asset that really speaks to them. Another thing that you talk about all the time is moving from these one-time random acts of marketing into something recurring. Once you've got that asset, I'd love to get your perspective on, okay, what are some of these tactics, and then to get that asset under the nose of your target audience, or even just continually doing certain marketing activities rather than just doing a little promotion and then forgetting about it.
Yeah, so one of the things that I really think about from a marketing perspective, so the book is Lean Marketing, and the Lean Marketing process is really broken up into three major leverage points, because if we want to do more with less, we're going to need leverage. And what leverage, just to define leverage very quickly, leverage is when you get a bigger impact for a smaller input. So if I put one unit of whatever in, money, time, energy, whatever, and I get more than one unit out, that's leverage at work. Mm. And so from a marketing perspective, there are three major things that are going to give you big leverage. There are tools, there are assets, which we just spoke about, and then there are processes. Tools, that should be pretty clear to most people. If I've got a brick wall, I might be able to smash it down with my bare hands, but it's going to take me a long time. I'm probably going to bleed a lot. It's probably going to hurt. I may not even be able to do it, but maybe I'll be able to do it. May be able to do it. But if I had a sledgehammer, I could do that in a couple of minutes with no problem. So tools are a clear force multiplier. And so in the marketing world, we've got tools like CRM systems and content management systems, and iNow is a real leverage tool as well. So it's pretty clear that with the right tools, you can get a much bigger result. So you can put one unit of time, money, energy, and get more than one unit back out. We've talked a little bit about assets. So again, assets is a real leverage point. So if you have marketing assets that work for you, you can generate new leads, new prospects, new revenue. Now, the third leverage point, as you alluded to, is processes. And so what I want to do whenever I'm marketing something, and whenever I'm thinking about doing a new marketing process, I want it to be something that's going to compound over time. I don't want it to be something that do the work once and it's once and done and gone forever, mm-hmm. which a lot of marketing is sometimes. Like, for example, with the example of cold calling, if I make one call, that's one opportunity to get my message across, and then that's it. That's never going to compound. It's never going to create anything. Another way that people get wealthy is through compound interest, the magic of compound interest. Now, compound interest absolutely applies to marketing as well. So if I can do a process, and by process, I mean something that you do daily, weekly, monthly, and it's something that can really help me compound my time, money, energy, and effort, that's something that I want to invest in. I'll give you a couple of examples from my business. So we talked about book already. Obviously, if I market my book, and if I sell more copies of my book, more people are going to see my message, more people are going to come inbound to me, and so on. Another example is exactly what we're doing right now. I'm a guest on podcasts pretty regularly. Now, that does take an amount of time, usually about an hour and a half, whatever it is. But now there's an asset there that someone may watch 5 years into the future, right? It's something that someone might watch on YouTube, come across, Google my name and find it. There are podcasts that I've appeared on as a guest years ago that people still reference today. They're like, hey, I saw you on such and such podcast. I really resonated with the message or whatever. So I want to do stuff that creates those assets and stuff that will compound over time. And so I'm trying to avoid those once and done things, because marketing is a process, not an event. And I want it to create an asset that's really going to compound over time, that's going to create something in the long term rather than something that I've just done once and then it's over.
Yeah, I love that idea of compounding and systems. Like, I see that across systems in all of the different departments, when each little system saves you a bit of time or does a little bit of marketing, and it just stacks and a snowball starts to then have an impact. Are there certain systems or anything that jumps out at you that from a like a process perspective, where you're just like, every business needs this particular system in place, or does it vary from business to business?
Yeah, I think it does vary from business to business, but really a lot of the most common ones is having a CRM tool. So how do we collect user data, people who are interested, people who are progressing, and then email marketing, I think, is underdone. People are focusing too much, I think, on social, and I'm not against social media, I'm on social media as well, but I think building an asset that you own, because social media is a rented asset, meaning you're not the landlord, somebody else is the landlord, and as such, they can throw you out at any time. And many people have been deplatformed, removed, banned, blacklisted, shadow banned, whatever it is, from social media. And they haven't necessarily been doing anything particularly controversial. And they can change the rules at any time. The rules are opaque. And so that's not me saying I'm against social media. It definitely has its place. But I think of it as all roads lead to Rome. You want externally rented assets like social media to point back to one of your assets, an asset that you own, because you want to be the landlord, not the tenant. So for me, it's stuff like my email list. I want to be seen on a podcast or whatever. I want to be mentioned on social media, but I also want it to lead to an email subscriber. I would rather have one email subscriber who's relevant in my target market than 1,000 people who've liked something I've done on social media. That to me is way more valuable because now it's a direct channel. I can communicate with them directly. No one can deplatform me. No one can put in a poll booth where, hey, we're going to charge you for communicating each time with your audience, which has happened many times. Back in the old days of Facebook, if you had a Facebook group, you could reach everybody in that Facebook group. Same with Instagram. Then suddenly they brought in things where you can only reach a tiny percentage of your audience unless you boost your post or buy ads. More recently, companies like Pinterest have stopped certain ads from running. So for example, for whatever reason, they decided that they don't want weight loss ads anymore on their platform. So if you were targeting people on their platform with weight loss ads, overnight they decided, hey, we don't want to do this anymore for whatever reason. I don't know, some people have got some ideology or biases or whatever. So you want to be building on your own platform, which is generally your website, your email list, your podcast, if you have one. So start building your own assets. So they're things that you can control and nobody can take away from you, and you can be the landlord rather than the tenant.
One of the things that jumped out at me there, someone listening, a real key takeaway would be to build your processes around how you do your email marketing, how you consistently generate engaging content that you then have a process for the way that. I know we're seeing some huge changes in content creation, and you touched on it earlier around the tools, but I'd love to dig into it a little bit deeper around AI, because we're seeing AI turn a lot of industries on its head, particularly when it comes around writing, content writing, lead magnets, some of the graphic assets. Love to get your thoughts on where you see the current game is and where it's going to head.
Yeah, I'm a big user of AI tools, but I think you need to use them very strategically. So what a lot of people, what I'm seeing a lot on social media is, hey, this is going to solve all of your problems. It'll do all the marketing for you. It'll create all the content. Now, I don't know how much people have used these tools to create content, especially written content, but I've certainly tested it and the output is pretty mediocre. And it's not mediocre because the tool is bad. The tool is doing exactly what it's designed to do. And what it's designed to do is to be like an autocorrect, which means it predicts what the most obvious word is. So for example, if you give it the sky is, the natural next thing that it'll come up with is blue. So it's going to come up with the most obvious cliched stuff possible because that's literally how it was designed to do. It's a statistical tool that predicts the next most logical word, the next word that comes up most often in the data that it's trained on. So it's trained on huge volumes of data, and it knows that after the sky is, the word blue usually comes after that. It's never going to write anything that's extremely novel or super interesting or an idea or an opinion or whatever. It's just going to regurgitate the next most obvious thing, like an autocorrect. Sometimes I think even it's integrated into a lot of Apple products now, you'll be typing and then it'll come up with a predicted word, right, that you can come up with. And so that's really what large language models like ChatGPT do, is prediction, coming up with the most obvious next word or sentence or whatever it is. Now, so if you want it to write original content, it's going to do a very bad job at it. However, I use it in a different way. I use it to help me as a writing tool. So just like we, you know, there used to be concern, I don't know, maybe I'm showing my age, but I remember when parents and teachers and all of that were very concerned that spell check would make us dumb and we would not know how to spell anything, but it just made us faster and it helped us proof our work quicker and all of that. And I think the same thing is true of large language models and AI and things like ChatGPT, is they're just going to help us be faster, quicker. So the way I'm using it, for example, is for research, for helping me complete sentences or complete phrases and things like that. For example, I might say something like, give me 20 different companies that were founded in Silicon Valley that pivoted from their original idea. And boom, it'll come up with those and give those to me. Now, that would have probably taken me 30 minutes or more to find on Google. So that's a superpower where it can help you research. They're also very powerful with creating structured content that has like a real right answer, like legal documents, like code. So those are things that have right answers and they want to be structured in a certain way. And so then you can take advantage of the fact that those models are using prediction and that they're coming up with the most obvious ways, because I want to use the most obvious ways that someone solves a coding problem, or I want to come up with the most obvious way that somebody writes a legal document. So those are things that I want to actually do.
I think one thing that really stands out, and it's a thread through all of your work, and it just relates back to this idea of evergreen, eternal marketing principles, regardless of what AI or new trends are coming down the pipe, it always just come back to those core philosophies. And when that comes to AI, that kind of sounds like you're approaching it in a similar manner, which is, I'm going to just keep doing what I'm doing, but it's going to be a tool to make me more efficient. Have I interpreted the way that you look at tools and trends?
Totally. That's 100% the way that I think of it. I think of AI as something that's going to be that Iron Man suit. So I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Iron Man. So yeah. Iron Man, he's like this geeky dude, normal sort of guy, a bit of a smart genius. Reminds me of you, Dave, a little bit. But he puts on the Iron Man suit and now he's got superpowers. He can fly, he can shoot lasers. He's doing stuff that he would never be able to do without that technology. And I think that's exactly what AI and all productivity tools really are there to enable us to do. When you look at the massive increases in productivity that we've had over the last couple of hundred years, it's essentially down to the use of technology and tools, and AI is on that spectrum. AI is an incredible tool, but you need to use it strategically. You can't be just like, hey, it's going to do all the work for me. Just like Iron Man, it doesn't really work just as the technology itself, right? It's not the suit autonomously going and doing its thing. It's someone driving it, someone making decisions, someone directing its energy, all of those sorts of things. And I think that's exactly the way that AI is going to really play out. There's a quote in the book, say, AI is not going to replace your job, but someone using AI will. So yeah. That's your biggest threat, is not necessarily just AI taking over. It's someone strategically using AI in their business to do what you do faster, cheaper, better.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's what I love about the latest book, Lean Marketing. Like, you've just really distilled it down to the essential elements, and it's a perfect complement to the one-page marketing plan. If people want to get a copy, is Amazon the best place for us to send them?
Yeah, Amazon. You can go to leanmarketing.com as well. We've got all the books listed there. But yeah, Amazon or wherever books are sold. It's really popular on audio as well. So we've got a really good narrator who's been reading it. And yeah, I think you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, a huge thank you. You're always so generous with your time and thoughts. And everybody listening to this should go out, get themselves a copy, and you can thank me later. And a huge thank you to you, Alan.
Thanks, Dave. My pleasure.
You've just been listening to the System Hub podcast. Remember, we've documented this system for you so you can literally swipe and deploy it within your business. Head to www.systemhub.com/podcast to download it now.